If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 347. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about wildebeest and guinea fowl and lions as we go to Kenya. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's episode and this week's interview, I do have two news stories for you. In the first one, you may remember the story from a little while back about American Airlines seats getting loose on some of their flights. I think we were mocking them that the good news was you had more legroom. The bad news was that it happened in the middle of the flight. Well, Spirit Airlines is also mocking American in their new ad that says, "We let low fares loose, not seats." One airline that's laughing a little less is Air France. Air France was slapped with an $85,000 fee for violating the full fare advertising rules. And this is a new rule, I'm not sure if you're aware of it, from the Department of Transportation, that when they advertise a fare, the fare has to be the full fare that you would pay. Now, that doesn't count baggage fees. It has to count all the airport taxes and other taxes that would be put on. So it would be how much money you would spend, at least if you took no luggage. $85,000 doesn't seem like a big fine, but at least they're putting some teeth into that new regulation. For links to both of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Gretchen of Hawaii, who's come to talk to us about Kenya. Gretchen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. I'm delighted to be here.
I've actually been looking for someone to come on and talk about Kenya for some time, and it's been surprising to me that it's been a little harder than I would think to find someone who's gone there. I'm guessing that you went to Kenya, there was some wildlife involved.
Yes, my husband is a wildlife photographer, and we both tend to be birders.
Oh, interesting.
So our first introduction to Kenya was actually with a friend who had lived in Kenya and had been in the Peace Corps, and she wanted to go back and revisit. So she put together a safari, and we joined her, us and some other people. And I sort of fell in love with the place, so we went back again this year.
I've been nearby, just the other side of the border there in Tanzania, but have not been. Well, I've been to the Kenya airport. We won't count that.
I suspect they're fairly similar, but
I think they are. Language and those sort of things are similar.
Yeah.
And then certainly some of the same animals we may have seen, because the animals don't seem to know where the border is.
No, they certainly don't. And this time we were there for the migration, which was really special.
Now, you say you were there for the migration. I'm not sure that everybody knows what time of year and what migration you're talking about.
Well, the migration is that of wildebeest and zebras, and they travel between the Serengeti and the Masai Mara, which is really the northernmost tip of Serengeti, and it is in Kenya. So they sort of make this great circle around Tanzania and Kenya, depending on where the grasses are, obviously. And so when the zebras and the wildebeest are there, there's a lot of food for predators. So consequently, you have the lions following them and the cheetahs and the leopards and et cetera.
And what time of year were you there?
We were there in August and on into September. The previous trip, we were there in January and February.
Now, is August still in the long, dry season?
Well, it is winter, but we happened to miss the rain. That's all I can say. But they had a deluge of rain several weeks before we got there, and it definitely impacted our trip, sometimes in positive ways and sometimes in negative ways.
Okay. And the reason why I ask is I know when I was in that area, they actually said they don't think of it as winter and summer. They think of it as the long dry season, the long wet season, the short dry season, and the short wet season. And they really don't quite correspond to our winter and summer in the same
way.
Well,
I could believe that. One thing that people that are thinking of going to Kenya, it's very dry and arid, or that most of the pictures are that way. But it's also very cold. And I don't think a lot of people fully understand that. The average elevation of Kenya is 4,500 feet elevation, and the temperature corresponds to that. So it gets down into the 40s at night, and then it's lovely during the day.
And this is out on the Serengeti, for instance?
Yes, around the Masai Mara, and the parts of southern Kenya tend to be cold.
Well, and then as long as we're talking about parts of Kenya, what itinerary did you do and what itinerary would you recommend?
I think you could go just about anywhere and be thrilled as long as you stay out of the cities. We started off in Samburu, which is north of Nairobi by about 8 hours driving time. I'll just give you a quick itinerary. Mm-hmm. Then we crossed over the country and went to Lake Baringo and then traveled south and eventually ended up at the Masai Mara and hit a lot of different spots along the way.
Now, it also sounded like, at least the first time you went, that you didn't just go on the internet and buy a safari package.
No, as I mentioned, this woman who had been in the Peace Corps there, she put it together. We were all bird watchers, and so she found a wonderful safari group called Birdwatching East Africa. And they are just so knowledgeable and so wonderful, and they put together any itinerary that you want. And in that instance, that first trip, we actually did go over to the coast. And then we also went up to Samburu and the same places we had gone this time.
And the second time, did you go with the same company again? Or
we did, because he's become a great friend of ours. And we trust him with our lives, basically.
Which is a good thing, since there are predators involved.
Yes, exactly. That's one thing about being in Kenya. You're suddenly part of the food chain and you're not at the top of it.
Okay. So now let's do that in a little more detail. So you say you first went to Samburu.
Okay. I would like to say that each time we've gone, we've opted to drive to places. And I really would recommend that, although the drives are just incredibly long to get from point A to point B. But you really get much more of a sense of what the country's all about and a sense of the people. And I don't want to say it makes you grateful for the way we live here, but it makes you understand that there are other ways to live. And a lot of people don't have things as easy as we have it.
Yeah, I know when I was in Tanzania, just over the border there, that the average salary per day of a school teacher was $3.
Oh, and she was making a lot of money.
Well, she was making more than her husband, who was a pastor, who was making $2 a day. So they had their little plot of land where they grew some food also. And
sure,
it doesn't tend to be necessarily a cash economy because the salaries are so low.
Well, exactly. And we met fellows that worked in the hotels, and they were making $8 a week.
Wow. Okay.
Ouch. Yeah.
Well, and I know the tour guide is one of the better jobs.
I'm sure it is.
For one thing, tips tend to make that more lucrative. And so for that reason, you tend to get tour guides who also have gone to school and have studied to be tour guides. And I think there's a reason why they tend to be good tour guides, is it's desirable. And so the cream tends to rise to the top there.
Exactly. Our tour guide had, I think he said he only had finished eighth grade, mm-hmm. but so many of the people in Kenya know at least three languages, because they know their tribal language, Swahili, and then English. But many of them that we met, and of course they're very apologetic that they have not had a higher education, but they can speak five languages. They speak German and Italian and English, and it goes on and on, and I just marvel at it.
Well, and I think, as I understand it, the system in Kenya and Tanzania is the same. So the first 4 years would be in your tribal language. So in Ki Maasai, for instance, or in Ki whatever. And then the second 4 years would be in Swahili. And then the final 4 years, if you stayed for 12, would be in English.
Well, my understanding is a little different than that. Mm-hmm. Mine is that they grow up in their homes learning their tribal language. Once they hit school in Kenya, they are taught in Swahili.
Okay, so that may be different from one versus the other. Okay.
Yes, and then once, if they're to go on to middle school, which of course has to be paid for, mm-hmm. so a lot of them don't go on, but that's all taught in English. So that's got to be pretty confusing.
Yeah, you'd think so.
Because Swahili is the national language, but English is the official language.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then again, back to your itinerary, you started in Samburu.
Samburu, which is, as I said, north of Nairobi by about 8 hours. It's very dry and very arid. The first time we went, I was not at all impressed with Samburu. This time, it was the highlight of the trip for me.
And what's in Samburu? Why that direction?
Well, I know it's a fairly common destination, but, well, I've fallen in love with the people of Kenya and the way the women dress, that is just their tribal dress, I guess. So these brilliant colored congas, and then the beads that are like big collars, so that they're about 6 to 8 inches long, these big collars that, mm-hmm. that they wear on them. And it's just so colorful and so beautiful. And you find that only in Samburu. You're going to find something different down in the Maasai Mara. And so I really liked that. But this time up in Samburu, we had just an exceptional encounter with elephants, in that we saw some and we followed them, and they were going over to the river, which brings me to the fact that the river was exceptionally full because of all that rain. Mm-hmm. And we had about 50 to 60 elephants crossing the river. And they, of course, played in the mud alongside for a while, and the babies would lay down in the mud. And then there was so much to look at, it was hard to really figure out what they were all doing. And then they'd begin crossing, and the babies would almost get swept away, and they'd fall into holes. But there was four elephants in particular that were probably teenagers, but they just laid down out in the middle of it and let it sweep them down, and they would roll over, and they were clearly playing. And sometimes you'd just see a trunk acting as a snorkel. You wouldn't see any elephants. And they got swept several hundred yards downstream. But it takes a lot of water to push an elephant downstream. And they stayed like that probably for 45 minutes. And all these other elephants just hanging around the banks, and it was just such a wonderful experience. It was unlike anything I'd ever expected to experience.
So I think the answer to my other question of why Samburu is because there is a national reserve there. So there, you went to three different parks that we're talking about.
Oh, thank you.
Here.
You did your homework better than I did. Yes, there is a national reserve there. And there are conservancies surrounding Samburu that are run by the tribes, and it benefits the tribes to go into those conservancies, so we often did that as well. Mm-hmm. And again, because we were on a bird watching safari, you're going to get very different birds in a dry, arid place than you would in another place. So that was another reason for going to Samburu.
Well, and my understanding is that I may have already seen pictures of Samburu because Samburu was made famous, well, famous is relative here, obviously, by the book and the movie Born Free. That's one of the two different areas that the people behind that book were behind.
Oh, I didn't realize that because we did visit their home, which is down by Lake Naivasha, and I thought she was just, Elsa was released somewhere near them.
Possibly, but I'm not sure where Elsa the Lioness was, but basically they were behind two different preserves, and this is one of them.
Oh, okay. I will accept that.
Excellent. Is there more we should say about Samburu?
Well, yes. While the photographers were all photographing, I went and visited a tribal village. And anytime in Kenya, and I'm sure in Tanzania on your visit, you always have armed guards with you around your campsite.
We actually didn't, but then we didn't camp out.
We were camping out in tents that were set up for us right there on the spot. So, yes, we were part of the food chain. And in Samburu, where we were set up, was right next to a dry stream bed, which is also, turns out, a super highway for a lot of the animals. So the guards parked themselves at night with a big fire right out in the middle of that stream bed to keep the elephants and the bigger animals away. And of course, they all had machine guns or big guns. I'm a girl. I don't know my guns. But the guns look dangerous. But anyhow, going back to the visiting the tribal village, one of the guards, whose name is Dominic, because they all have Christian names, Dominic invited me to go to his village. And I believe that I was with some other folks from our safari. I believe we may have been the first people to visit his village. They were so excited. And he invited us into their hut, which is, we had to stoop over to get in. And it's about the size of maybe my bathroom. And of course, that's where they cook and they sleep and they do everything. And it's just, it's tiny, tiny, tiny. And the women build them out of sticks and then cover them with plastic and clothing. I think a lot of the donated clothing that Americans send over is used as roofing material, be that as it may. So that was really exciting. And all the ladies from the village came out and welcomed us. And then you pay for the privilege of going to any village, but it's good because you're allowed to take as many pictures as you want. And so, I had a digital camera, and every time I'd take a picture of one of the ladies, I would show her. Although she didn't speak English, you could tell she was going, "Oh, my goodness, my hair looks horrible. Oh, I didn't know I had that."
Some things are universal.
It really was. It was so cute. And I really and truly enjoyed that experience.
We found that with the kids that was always great fun. But, of course, it was endless fun to them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And of course, the kids were there, too, and posing and acting silly. And yeah, it's just great fun because you get a glimpse into what their life is like. And they're just such wonderful people. They really are lovely people. Okay, I'm done there. So leave Samburu.
Okay.
And then we were to go to Mount Kenya, but due to the rains, the road to Mount Kenya had become a wet stream bed. So we went on to Lake Baringo, but along the way we stopped at Solio Reserve, which is a privately owned reserve and requires special permission to get there. But at Solio, they're raising rhinoceros. And we went out in the boonies there. And at one point, that was exciting because about a mile away on a distant hill, there was about 30 rhinos in silhouette. And that was really exciting to see. I'm a real wildlife kind of girl, so that was really neat.
I have seen one in the wild. I mean, we saw herds of zebras and herds of wildebeest, but one black rhino.
You don't want to see too many rhinos, especially if you're not in your car. That's another thing that people who've never been to Africa, the car becomes a shield between you and the animals, and you're not allowed out of the vans, generally, it can be tough on those of us that drink a lot of coffee or tea in the morning. But it's just something you have to put up with.
Well, and we did have places where we were out in the park and someone would not make it to lunchtime and the pit toilet, and so they would be ushered out behind the back of the van, but the guide was always very careful about what part of the park we were in and where the predators were before
exactly.
they did that.
Our guides were also good about that, about letting us out, but it had to be somewhere where they could see all around.
Yeah, obviously.
And mm-hmm. yeah, these aren't things you normally think about. But you do need to think about them in Kenya. So then we went on to Lake Baringo, and again, it was very much impacted by the rains. We had been to Lake Baringo on the first visit and camped not far from the water's edge. This time, the lake had risen maybe 30 or 40 feet. And where we had camped before was now underwater. And the resort that was there right next to where we camped is now underwater and is closed. So that was interesting just to see the difference. Baringo is known for birds, and it's not a place that the average person would go to. But if people like to see diversity of birds, Baringo is the pièce de résistance in Kenya.
Well, you say birds. I was reading 470 species of birds.
Well, during the 3 weeks we were there, we got 430.
Wow.
Yeah. I believe that there are more like 1,000 species in Kenya at certain times of year, because birds migrate down from Europe and winter in Kenya. And so you get all kinds of birds in there.
And the most memorable being what?
Most memorable bird for me, oh golly, there's so many, but I love the guinea fowl.
Okay.
I don't know if you saw those in Tanzania.
Mm-mm, no.
But they're brilliant blue, and they're a large bird. They're about the size of a big chicken, and they are a ground bird, and they're this brilliant blue with these long feathers, and then they have white striping coming down and then polka dots on the wings, and and they go around in pretty large flocks and make a lot of noise, and they're just kind of fun. Of course, there's so many birds. I mean, flamingos and hornbills and just wonderful, wonderful birds.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Anything else about the lake we should talk about?
Well, again, I went to visit another tribe there, and this one was a Stone Age tribe. Still one of the few remaining Stone Age tribes, and it happened to be a little bit north of there. And we signed up to go visit, or asked our guide to set it up. And we were taken up there, and the tribe is nomadic, but because of land squabbles, they're fairly more stationary now than they have been. It's called the Pokut tribe. And they've put enough money together to send one of their young boys who showed a lot of promise all the way through high school and now on into college. And it just so happened that he was there during the time that we were, so he gave us a tour. These ladies put mud in their hair, and they have their necks stretched up, and they don't use any metal implements or tools. It's all Stone Age, and they make bows and arrows to shoot with. And I mean, it was just fascinating. They weren't nearly as welcoming as Dominic's people.
I think that's probably why they would still be.
Yes. But very sadly, and I think I mentioned to you in an email, it's not sad, but China has come in and paved 40,000 miles of road in Kenya. And one of those roads is going right past this Pokut tribe. So I feel that within 10 years, they will not be a Stone Age tribe. So I'm really grateful that I got to see them.
Although if I were a Stone Age tribe, I wouldn't mind not being a Stone Age tribe, I think so. It's always one of those complicated things.
It is, and you have to reserve your judgment when you go to a place like this, because you have no idea what anybody wants.
Right.
So from there, we went down to Lake Nakuru, which also had risen its banks by about 20 feet. There's a lot of wildlife in that area, different types of gazelles and things like that. And then down to Lake Naivasha, which I would miss if I were anyone else. But it just so happens that the way our safari was set up, we would tent camp in a particular area, and then they would put us in a hotel for a night while they moved all the tents and everything to the next area mm-hmm. and got set up. But it was a place that was so the guys could go on and set up at the Maasai Mara. And then once we got to the Maasai Mara, we were camping up on a cliff overlooking the Mara, as it's known. And you just had this expansive view. It was just incredible of everything below you. And of course, as you mentioned, animals don't know about borders. So the animals do come up. We had a giraffe walk through our tent. I mean, through our camp. And all sorts of things like that. But this is the home to the Maasai people, and they dress very differently. They dress in bright yellows and bright reds, and the men wear red and blue, and they're very proud of their traditional dress and all the beadwork. And so the men also wear all the beadwork, and I don't know. It's just like something out that you saw in National Geographic when you were a kid. Mm-hmm. And I think this is part of the draw, is that all of a sudden you're living National Geographic. But the thing that's so interesting is everybody that we met, except maybe the Pokut tribe, has email. They have cell phone. So you can't stop progress.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And the Maasai Mara was, of course, wonderful because of the migration that we talked about. We had a wonderful encounter with a cheetah who perched on an anthill about 20 feet away from our van and just stayed there for half an hour or so. And she had it was a female, and she had her teenager with her. And the teenager kept trying to play with her, and the female would bat him away. Leave me alone, kid. I gave you some food. I don't know. There's just so many. Just every moment is exceptional. It's just such a magical place for me. And I think most people would enjoy it if they don't mind getting a little bit dirty and living out in the wild. But you also can go luxury and fly from point A to point B. But I think you miss a lot that way.
Now, in the Serengeti and the Maasai Mara, there aren't any lodges, are they?
Yes, there's some very upscale.
Are there? Okay, that I was not sure of.
The East Mara has a lot of lodges.
Okay.
But the East Mara, because it's so close to Nairobi and can be done almost as a day trip, is a little bit devoid of wildlife.
Got it.
The wildlife go where there's not people. So we were on the West Mara, and we got a lot more wildlife. Because last time my husband and I went, after our safari, we went and did the East Mara by ourselves. And you had to really look hard for wildlife and do a lot of driving. I would definitely recommend the West Mara to anybody. There's a lovely lodge called the Serena Lodge out in the middle of the Mara, and it's on a big hill. And for somebody that didn't want to stay in a tent, that would be a lovely place to stay.
Well, and the reason I ask is I've never heard of somebody going to either the Serengeti or to the Maasai Mara and staying in a lodge. Everybody I know who's gone there has done the tent camping. So
when we went to the East Mara, we stayed in a tent lodge. Okay. And that was quite nice. And you do still hear the hyenas at night and things like that. Well, you still have to have an armed guard with you to go from the dining room to your tent. So tents aren't all that safe, no matter how luxurious they are. But you had a shower inside your tent, and that was nice. I won't deny that.
When you mentioned that when you were at the last lake that there were a lot of gazelles, I know the Thompson gazelle is very popular there, or is very common there, which I think can run up to 35 miles per hour. So in Africa, that's fast food, I think, right?
Yes, I imagine it is. And you get the Grant's gazelles and the oryx. I failed to mention that there was a tame oryx at the Samburu Conservancy where we stayed. And I was photographing it, not knowing that it was tame, and it walked over to me.
You know, with the great big long antlers.
Yes, yeah. So it got too close for me to photograph, of course, but things like that are fun. But I'd prefer not to see tame wildlife, I think.
You mentioned that it was better to do the driving, not to just fly from point to point, and that you got a better sense for the country, not just the wildlife, but for the country. What sort of things did you see along the road that lead you to say that?
Well, the way commerce is conducted, you have big marketplaces that, quite frankly, to me are scary because they're just teeming with people.
Oh, I loved the marketplaces.
Really?
Oh. Yeah. We went in the marketplaces where literally one member of our tour was able to find the other nine of us, there were 10 of us total, who had walked off in that direction because every time they saw him, they would go, oh, Wazungu, the white people? They went that way. It's like we were the only 10 white people there. So
that is something I love about Kenya, is just being one of the only white people in my view. Mm-hmm. I just think that's, the people are so beautiful. Oh my goodness. Anyhow, so then as you're driving along, there's these little mom and pop businesses. We just had so much fun with the names of them. One of the names, it was actually turned out to be a catering business, but it was husband and wife recently married, learning to get along catering. That was the name of the business.
Oh, well, there's truth in advertising there, clearly.
I love things like that.
That's
and,
funny.
Of course, the butcheries are often right next to the hotel, so it's Paradise Butchery and Hotel, which I don't fully understand. And I think hotels are restaurants, but I'm not clear about that because I was never brave enough to go into one of those establishments. There are parts of it that are intimidating. I don't want to say that it's not intimidating, but I feel very at home there. But there are little aspects of it that make me have to push that edge a little bit.
Who is the most memorable local you met?
Well, I would have to say Dominic and his village. Just the look of the women, the beautiful colors, and then the warmth that they exuded. I love that you can communicate with people across languages where you don't understand them, they don't understand you, but they make you feel welcome, and I think that's a very nice thing.
Excellent. So you've been twice. What surprised you the second time?
What surprised me was how much Kenya had changed in a year and a half. The first time I went, I saw it as a third world country, and that was through my eyes. And going back, I realized it is a developing country. But some of the development I was not happy to see, and in point of case, was agribusiness. European agribusiness has come in and taken over huge chunks of the land that used to be little farms. I mean, these places we went last time, and they were just little farms and people herding their goats or whatever. And now it's nothing but corn for miles and miles and miles. And this is all to feed the European market. This does not stay in Kenya.
Well, obviously, if it goes out of the country, that also means it's a cash crop. So there's flip sides both ways.
I'm not sure who's getting the cash, though.
Yep, that's always the question, right?
Yeah. And then, of course, the paved roads was a nice change.
Right.
Because dirt roads that aren't maintained are not fun to drive on for 8 hours.
Not so much.
Not so much, no.
One warning you would give?
Well, several warnings. You are part of the food chain, so use common sense. One of the people in our safari got so excited at seeing a rhino that he jumped out of the van to take pictures of it.
Oh, my.
Yeah. I kept going, get back in the van. Well, anyhow, so do be aware that these animals, I think we have this problem in the U.S. too. People get excited about seeing a grizzly bear and they jump out of their car to photograph it and then wonder why they got mauled. So do be aware of the animals and their potential for harm there. And just understand that you can't get out and pee every time you feel like it. The first time I went there, that was a tough one. Because the ladies, once they would open the door, the ladies would just pile out as fast as they could.
You said your husband took 13,000 pictures.
Yes.
What one or two really just take you back there? Just really iconic for your visit.
Well, there was one picture that he took last time that stands out in my mind. And it, to me, it just exemplifies Kenya altogether. And one morning we were in a van going somewhere early, and it was in a fairly populated area at Lake Naivasha. And there was a gentleman walking his maybe 5-year-old child down the road to school. And out of the bushes comes a giraffe and walks right in front of them. And it didn't faze them at all. It would be like a dog or a cat walking in front of us. And he got a picture of it. And to me, that just is Kenya in a nutshell. It's people and wildlife living together.
Yeah, I remember we were driving on the road when suddenly the giraffes decided to cross the road. And we weren't in a park or anything like that at the time. But they migrate.
Yes, they do. And I was also surprised that just around houses, there's zebras. I mean, once you get out of Nairobi, there's zebras, there's giraffes. It's just part of the wildlife. Hmm. It's part of life there.
You know this question. When did you feel closest to home and when did you feel furthest from home?
I have to say, I feel very, very much at home in Kenya. Mm-hmm. Just being there, I feel like I should be living there. If I actually did, I don't know if I'd feel that way. When I'm out in the bush and looking at wildlife, and I feel so, so, so comfortable and so much at home.
How about when you're lying in your tent at night and you hear the hyena?
Oh, I love that.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't feel threatened by a hyena. Now, if it was a lion, we did wake up one morning on the first trip and the guard said, oh, did you hear the lion kill last night? No. Oh, yeah. A lion killed a zebra about 1,500 feet from the tent. It's like, oh, my gosh, that's not very far away. But when do I feel furthest away from home? Mm-hmm. When I'm on the damned airplane.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Because I live in Hawaii, it's exactly halfway around the world from us. Mm. And it's about a 36-hour trip.
Yeah. No, it is a long trip. 2-night flights in a row, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, at least.
At least, yeah.
But it's worth it once I'm there.
One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Kenya.
When I see a hole in the ground that I have to use as a toilet.
Okay.
Because that's what you will find in gas stations and things.
Ah, okay. We're not just out of the bush here. Okay.
No. And then also we, on the first trip, we took a train ride to Mombasa. Mm-hmm. And they had a toilet. And, well, they had cut a hole in the floor, basically. So that is something you have to learn how to do. And on this trip, we stopped somewhere and there was some American folks and she went into the lavatory. It looked like a nice lavatory, but it was just a hole in the floor. And she walked out and she said, I don't think I can do that. I said, well, you better get used to it.
Before you go to Kenya next time, you'll make sure you pack what?
Well, I'm going to bring my better camera for sure. Mm-hmm. Warmer clothes.
Which is surprising.
Yeah, over the nights out on the Mara, mm-hmm. It was very, very chilly.
When we were out on the game preserves, we were in one of the Land Cruisers that the top popped up.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that a monopod actually was a good thing to take with your camera when you're trying to get a picture of that black rhino that's doesn't want to get close to the vans.
Okay, well, you're not talking to the photographer. You're talking to the photographer's wife. So in that case, it would be bring a book. But but he uses a bean bag.
Oh, okay, sure. To perch it on the top of the car for stabilization.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's another good trip.
And if you're traveling with somebody who's just crazy about photography, yeah, bring a book.
Okay.
You can only look at wildlife so long.
How many days did you do?
The safari was 21 days.
Oh, my. That is a long time.
Yes. And then we got there about 5 days early, I think, to sort of acclimate from that Hawaii to Nairobi trip. And we did some fun things in Nairobi. And one of those was the Kazuri Bead Factory.
Okay.
Which I would highly recommend to folks that are going to Kenya, because they now do everything from mining the clay to making the beads. And it started out as a way to help single mothers, and it was just sort of an experiment, and they now employ 300 people.
Oh, wow.
And sell beads around the world.
Hmm.
And it's a very clean facility. It's just, it's beautifully done. It's very nice. And we also went to the giraffe center, where they are raising the Rothschild giraffes. And that was fun.
The Rothschild giraffes.
There's three types of giraffes.
Okay. The reticulated, the Maasai giraffe. I didn't know there was a third type.
Yes, the Rothschild. And I think it may have been brought in from somewhere else, but it is endangered.
Hmm.
So they breed them there, and when they're ready for release, they release them in the national parks. But I will warn people, there's a warning, that the giraffes are pretty sly. And if they drink water, they will splash it on you, and they're very good aims. Happened to be my birthday, and that was my birthday present, was getting splashed on by a giraffe.
Before we wrap this up, anything else that people should know before they book their airfare for Kenya?
Well, I would say, well, number one, if we're talking about airfare, shop around.
Yeah.
But also, I would like to tell people that on our first trip, the first 3 days, I thought, oh my gosh, get me the hell out of here. It was Nairobi, and the surrounding areas were so intimidating to me. It was so unlike anything I'd ever experienced. And my husband also felt the same way. And by the time we got back to Nairobi, it just felt so natural. So don't be afraid. It will get more comfortable if you do go there.
Now, had you spent any time in some place that was a developing country or a third world country before Kenya?
Sure. Okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah. But for some reason, you hear all these stories about the dark continent, and it's just, it's years of hype, I think.
Hmm. Interesting.
So, yeah, no, I was listening to another of your podcasts today about Namibia, and those folks also mentioned that their preconceptions about Africa colored their going into it, but were quickly dispelled.
Interesting.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, you know the last two questions.
I do.
Finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in Kenya when what?
Well, I go back to when a giraffe crosses in front of your path.
And if you had to summarize Kenya in three words, what three words would you use?
It would be wildlife, people, and wonderful.
And you mentioned the wildlife and the people. Which would you go back for?
I personally would go back for the people.
Okay. That was the same experience that I had, is I told people go for the wildlife, but you'll go back for the people.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, we've already got another trip planned, and I do hope to work with some of the people.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, Gretchen, thanks so much for coming on the Amateur Traveler and telling us about your love of Kenya.
Well, it's certainly been my joy. So thank you, Chris.
I heard from Annette earlier today, and when I say heard from, I actually talked to Annette on the phone as she was trying to get an email through to me. She called the phone number that's in the contact page, which actually rings through to my cell phone. Annette loved the podcast recently on New Zealand, but didn't so much love the one on the Great Smoky Mountains and on Western North Carolina. And this is from Annette's letter. One of my favorite places to travel is the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. With delight, I saw that this was to be the next podcast. With horror, I listened to your podcast. Did this individual drive through the Smokies once and said that he saw it? Boy, was he wrong on so many levels. The one thing that I agree is that Gatlinburg is a tourist trap. First off, Gatlinburg is in Tennessee, not North Carolina. I'm fairly certain we said that, although I may have confused you because I did label the show as being Western North Carolina, but we did say we were starting in Tennessee. Cherokee is not a quaint little place. It, too, is a tourist trap. For goodness sake, there is a glaring huge casino with flashing lights that glare through the area. There are Indian tourist things throughout. It would never be labeled as quaint. If someone truly wishes to discuss these ancient mountains, then discuss the history of the Trail of Tears and the Civil War. We'll do that in just a minute. To see, there are so many waterfalls and named hiking trails, it is incredible. The beauty and solitude of these mountains is unparalleled. There's whitewater rafting, horseback riding, hiking, car hiking, and camping. Please interview someone else for this lively destination, as this interview talked way too much about Asheville and other places than the park. I was extremely disappointed with his blasé attitude about this magnificent area, and by the way, a Californian should see this park for the sheer green and lush beauty. These ancient mountains will thrill you with their diversity. And I did want to read Annette's letter, even though we did just talk about some of the shortcomings of that show recently, in part because we probably won't do another show right away about this destination. That's going to be true about a lot of destinations. So don't do what Annette did, which is while we're talking on the phone, she said, well, you should have talked to me. That is not the time to tell me that. The time to tell me that I should talk to you about a particular destination that you love is before I do an episode about it, preferably before I do an episode that you're going to hate about it. So I'm always looking for guests. I love to have people on who listen to the show. And so think about what place you would love to talk about and tell other people about that you can do so with enthusiasm and knowledge. And then in terms of the Trail of Tears, for those of you who are outside the U.S. and probably far too many of you who are inside the U.S., what Annette is referring to here is from 1830 to 1838, a series of five tribes who were actually assimilating into the U.S. culture were forcibly removed from their lands and sent further west so that basically other people could have their lands. And that includes the Cherokee. The Cherokee were the last of that and probably best associated with the Trail of Tears, but it also includes the Choctaw, Chickasaw, Creek, and Seminole tribes. Those fives are sometimes known as the five civilized tribes because we have to understand, for instance, the Cherokee, at the time that they were removed, had developed their own language, were printing newspapers. The U.S. was dealing with them prior to this in a fashion that was recommended by George Washington, which was assimilating the people rather than just keep stealing their lands and pushing them farther west. That was a policy that was Andrew Jackson's, who was an Indian fighter. And that's the Trail of Tears. The Civil War is a larger discussion, although I would love, as a huge, huge Civil War buff, to do an episode about, for instance, Northern Virginia and some of the Civil War battlefields up in that area. With that, I think we'll end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. Remember that if you're listening to this in November, you can still vote for The Amateur Traveler for the Podcast Award at podcastawards.com. If you want to do that, before you do that, you want to listen to the New Zealand episode and apparently not the episode about the Great Smoky Mountain National Park. After you listen to the New Zealand episode, also feel free to go over to iTunes and give us a review. If you have any questions, you can call me as Annette did or send me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. You can also comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com in the show notes for this episode, right there in that iPhone, Android phone, iPad, iPod, computer thingy that you're listening to. It will have the URL for this particular show. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X, and as always, thanks so much for listening. Maybe not.